background on different types of chef, Nathan and Gisela, and about how they interact differently. And we talked a little bit just to highlight the key points that essentially Gisela is when you steal something openly, Genev is when you steal something surreptitiously. And hashgafically and halachically, we find that the Gemara and others, both based on dinim in the Torah and statements in the Gemara and statements in the Rambam, it seems that Geneva is worse than Gizela. And that's because, from a Lumdisha perspective, as Reb Chaim put it, so Gazel is simply the withholding of somebody else's money, the taking and withholding of somebody else's money, while Geneva is that plus. Geneva includes Gazel and has more to it in terms of sneakiness, deception of the victim. The Gemara also highlights the fact that because you're being sneaky, you show that you don't care that God is watching, you just care that other people are watching. That's a different component. But in general, the offense of not only taking somebody's money, but also doing it in a sneaky way, makes Geneva worse. So it is Gezel plus. And then we discussed a little bit yesterday, could you also have Geneva minus Gezel? And we talked some situations where that could happen. Let's say, for example, if you're taking back your own property, so the Gemara says that you should do that openly rather than sneak it to the person's house and take it. You shouldn't act like a ganav even when you're taking your own property. And we discussed that the Gemara also has a category called the gonev amanas lamekat, gonev amanas l'shalim, that it's not permitted to steal even if you are going to give it back for whatever reason. You stole it as a joke, you stole it to teach the guy a lesson, you stole it to get the guy kefil, whatever it is, it's still prohibited. And that seems to be another example of Geneva minus Gizeo. So if that's the case, so then that has apparently its own issur. We talked a little bit about whether it's a separate thing completely, or is it a component of Geneva with attendant nachmina, this is a possibly nesed rabbana. And then we talked also about how some distinguish that maybe Gezel doesn't have such an issur. And that we could understand if that's true, we could understand it logically, because if Gezel is just about taking somebody else's money, so if we subtract taking it and keeping it, so if we subtract that element, so maybe we have nothing. The whole chap of Geneva is that Geneva has this added component of sneakiness, and therefore you have some halachas that focus on just the sneakiness component, but Gezel doesn't have that component, and therefore maybe, for example, Gozel, Amanasa, Shalim, for example, Gozel with the intent to give it back, let's say, like the Gemara has about Eov, where you want to increase the value of what you're taking and then give it back to the orphans, so maybe that would be permitted. And we mentioned yesterday a discussion in the pages of Tchumen about whether a teacher who confiscates property from children is he in violation of this idea. Do we say that that is a Gozel Amanasla Shalim? Or do we say that maybe it doesn't even exist? Maybe the answer of Zayla doesn't have this concept of Amanas Hashem. Okay, I think that's where we left off. So it's important also to understand the concept of Oshek. So Oshek seems to me, the way the Rambam defines it, that let's say I have something in my possession of yours, and maybe it got to me beheter. I borrowed it, I'm holding on to it, or whatever it is, and I refuse to give it back. So that is a violation of Oshek. Translated generally, Oshek seems to refer to holding back payment from somebody. So here, if you look now at the first Rashi, that time we'll finally get the second Rashi in the Masechta. So the Mishnah had told us the Nimamanis Bishlosha, and apparently separately, Gizelos Vichavalos Bishlosha. So says Rashi, what is Gizelos? So Rashi lays out a couple of different categories. Kofer v'pikado, right? That if I have something in my property that I'm watching, in my possession rather, that I'm watching of yours, and I deny it. So now this is my way of taking possession permanently of your property. So that is one type of gizela. But Rashi adds an important clause, which is not so obvious. And what does Rashi say? That once you start using it, so that makes you a gazlan. So what's strange about that ration? Or what's less than obvious about that ration? A couple things that are less than obvious about it. Okay, are you?
They have to start using it in order to be gazlan.
Okay, right, because you could have thought that what?
Once you deny deny it once you have it in your possession.
Mm-hmm.
Deny that you have it.
Right, so why isn't that enough? Right? Why isn't it enough for you to say that when the person comes and asks for it back, and you say, what thing? I never heard of such a thing. So why is that not enough? Why is there a need for shluch l'tziyad? Right, Tamir, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was going to say that this is not, if you think of gazelle, you think it would just be stealing something.
Right.
This is not,
so in other words, it's the less obvious example.
Right.
Right? If I'm going to tell you something, what is stealing? Oh, stealing, that's when somebody gives you something to watch, and you decide to start using it after you deny that you have it. It's not the first example. Especially because then Rashi then goes on to give the more obvious example. Right? Oh yeah, you know what else might be stealing? When you grab something from somebody. It's a Gemara elsewhere that cites that pasuk as reflective of the paradigmatic type of stealing. Right, so now Rashi is telling me something else, that that if somebody borrows money and doesn't pay it back, so such a person is not called a gazel. So this is an important discussion. Right, Rashi follows it up by saying, milva lahotzah nitna. What does that phrase mean, milva lahotzah nitna? Right, so money is meant to be spent, a loan is meant to be spent, so what's the significance of that thing?
Meaning it's not considered, if you didn't return it at the exact time, it's not necessarily gave or stolen, because the money is going to be used up anyway, so you're not going to get that exact $100 anyway.
Okay, so I don't know if you necessarily have to focus on the exact time part of it, because when you never return it, but there seems to be some significance in the fact that you're spending it. In other words, there's something unique about money. When you lend money to somebody, in English, we don't have the terminology really to distinguish between different types. This is very important to learn Hilchos Ribbis. So in Hilchos Ribbis, we have two different words, which English doesn't translate so well, that we have halva and we have she'ela. English would translate both those words as to borrow. I could borrow money from you, and I could borrow your car, I could borrow your laptop. So the halacha views those as two distinct categories. Because if I borrow your laptop from you, I return your laptop. Return the same item that I borrowed. If I borrow money from you, I borrow a $10 bill, I'm not going to give you back that $10 bill. I'm going to give you back a different $10 bill, or I'll give you back 10 singles or 2 fives. I'll give you back a totally different object that is equal in value to what I took. So that's called halva. And halva, there's major halachic distinctions. So, for example, in Hilchos Ribbis, the whole prohibition of Ribbis, the whole prohibition of charging interest, paying interest, that is only relevant to what we call halva. So, if I borrow a laptop and I return it and I say, okay, you know, I'm so grateful that you gave me the laptop, I'll throw in a cookie, or, you know, a food cookie, not a lot of cookie in your laptop, so I'll throw in a few dollars, so that's okay, that's not called Ribbis, because Ribbis only applies when it is a halva. So if I give you some extra gift, whether it's stipulated at the beginning or not, either way, I'm not going to run into any ribbis problems for that. And in fact, that's what we call renting. Like people will borrow things, give them back, and pay for them all the time. That's called renting, and the halacha doesn't have a problem with that. The halacha has a problem with renting money. That's where we get into ribbis interests. And the difference in halacha is this idea that halva is qualitatively different, and that's what this phrase means. So in this case, it's significant because really this goes back to Kofi B'Kikaron. Right? If you look at this Rashi at the end, these words at the end, so this helps us understand a little bit the first words of Rashi. Right? The middle part of Rashi, where he talks about the standard, normal type of gezel, that's why it's in the middle, okay, but that seems to be very understandable. Okay, that's a gezel. But the beginning and the end a little bit help inform each other. Anyone want to try to explain what I'm talking about? What seems to be a common theme between the two? Are you?
You receive something legitimately.
Okay, that's okay. Right, that's definitely something I have in common. What else?
You're also refusing to give back.
Correct. Right, but something also that distinguishes this from normal gzeila. There's basically three stages in this rash. Right, kofer b'tigada, chotef mechavero, and milva. And and C are together, and B is not. B is the exception. So A and C share a common rule. So what's really in common about them? What you said is true, but it seems to be there's something else that Rashi is teaching us over there. So what seems to be the case is that Rashi is highlighting the fact that when we talk about Beis Din getting involved here, or Beis Din not getting involved, we're focusing on a certain aspect of the crime. Now, we're not necessarily talking about any case that is an avera that deprives someone else of money. Because presumably, when I deny your pikadon, it's in my property. So now I have already denied you your property, denied you money, and presumably I'm in violation of an avera there also. Right? Would you think, from this Rashi, kofer pikadon mishal chayon v'gazon, so this condition, which we don't totally understand, why he says Mishashala Koyad. Right, so without necessarily fully understanding that, but so what would anyone think that Rashi's saying, okay, no Shlichus Yad is fine then? Right, Het the Gomer? So if I say, if I deny that I have your property and I don't actually use it, and I keep it away from you for the next 50 years, so Het the Gomer, no problem whatsoever? Or the last case also, right? Lova below Shiway, no problem at all.
Somewhat of a time trick.
We'll close the Lova Shiway forever. I borrow money and I refuse to ever pay it back. And by the way, just parenthetically, to connect this to Pruzbol, which we spoke about, and again, to keep our synergy points high. So if you recall, this question of whether it's called Gezel or not, when you withhold somebody's money, say you withhold paying back a loan. So this comes up in the principal discussion, if you remember, the Gemara was at the skipping, I think you had a chance to see it, that the Gemara asked, how could it be that there could be a notion of Shemitah Midrabanan? How could Chazal create a concept of Shemitah Sefen, tell you not to pay back your loans, if it's a Din Min HaTorah, so we understand it. But if it's a Din Midrabanan, so he says the Gemara here, the Torah says pay back your loan, and the rabbis are going to tell you not to pay back your loan, they're going to put you in a violation of Lo Sigzol, so it sounds like Shemitah Midrabanan, right? So there, we have to figure out how to reconcile that. It sounds like somebody is in violation of Lo Sigzol if somebody refuses to back a loan. And we had to explain, that Gemara had to answer, how could Chazal create Shemitah Midrabanan, which would result in people who borrowed money not paying it back? That's going to go up against the Torah of Lo Sigzol. So what many point out in this Rashi is that there really are two different dinim of gzela or gneva in the Torah, meaning that there's two different levels. There is an avera, and then there's what we call kinyani gneva. That an act of gneva is somewhat paradoxically a kinyan, is an acquisition of the object that's being sold, which then creates a chiyuv hashava, then creates now an obligation of the ganav to return, to pay back that which he has acquired. But he takes on responsibilities. He's now the owner. He takes on liabilities for this item. So it could be that what Rashi is highlighting here is nothing to do with the avera. It's only about kinyanim, kinyanim and gzeila. When does the gazlan take on that status, and that's going to affect what kind of bezin you need to deal with. Now maybe we're talking about one issue if we're just dealing with averos, and we're dealing with another issue if we're actually talking about kinyanim that take place once you steal something. So if you read it that way, so that Rashi reads well. And basically, now it's put everything back together. Kofer b'pikadon, k'misha shalach bo yad hevigazan. If I deny I have your property, so then I'm doing something wrong. But when do I become a gazan in the sense of kinyanei gneiva? Kinyanei gneiva is a good way to say it. We refer to it briefly. But kinyanei gneiva gzela, so when do I become a gazan? Specifically, when I start using it, because I have to make a kinyan, so to speak. So the kinyone gzeila take place, you become a gazlan in the full sense of the word once you start using it. Doesn't mean you didn't do anything wrong until then. V'chei ha-chotef mi'achaveru of the gazlan, so you steal something straight out, so that's clear, aveiru with kinyone gzeila. Right, so far, now we understand where it's going. So if you take something and don't pay it back, borrow something rather than don't pay it back, so then you are not called a gazlan at any point, apparently. Meaning what? Meaning not that it's not an avera. It may not be called gzela, it may be called oshek. But it certainly is an avera. But you don't have kinyane kinyane. Which we understand, right? Because at no point does this individual do a maisa with any stolen object. Because he didn't steal the money in the first place, he didn't take it out of your pocket, you gave it to him willingly. And we can't really compare it to pikadon, because pikadon, we can say, all right, it ended up in his possession willingly, you gave it to him willingly, but what he did wrong was he shouldn't use it when it's in his house. And when he used it, he does the maisa gzeil. But if he's going to spend the money, well, he's supposed to spend the money. That's what a halva is. Milva l'hotza nitna. Milva is given to spend. So the fact that he spent the money, that does not turn him into a gazlan with any kind of ginyane kizela, and that seems to be what Rashi is referring to. So this Rashi is important to understand the contours a little bit. This is a topic of a lot of discussion. So it seems like that's essentially what Rashi is getting it. Okay, but then the Gemara wants to figure out, so what exactly is going on with these different categories? So just to see a few key lines from the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, so atu, gzeilos v'chavolos, la v'gmarin beis mebeis, right after the mission is over. So they ask the Gemara, atu, gzeilos v'chavolos, la v'nimamnes din hu, so why do we need both? Why do we need nimamnes for shlosha, and gzeilos v'chavolos for shlosha? Amar b'bo, mahim sani. So, but maybe the Gemara is just telling me what they are. Mahim b'dimamnes, gzeilos v'chavolos. So, v'hodos v'chavolos, hodos v'halvos, lo. But when it comes to hodos and halvos, no. What would no mean here? It means that apparently you don't need whatever this threshold is. That you could have something less than whatever this mission is telling us that we need. V'tzricha, and we need this, we need both phrases. D'itani b'dimamnes, if I just say b'dimamnes, hava minedafil hodos v'halvos. You would have thought that yes, also included. So therefore, Tana Gzeilos v'Chavolos. We Tana Gzeilos v'Chavolos for Lok San Dinim Amnes. We're just translating to that. Hava Amina who I did that Filu Hodas v'Chavolos. Haidik San Gzeilos v'Chavolos. Mishum Iker Gimel exceeded v'Chavolos exceeded. So if you would have just had that phrase, you would have thought that really this is the rule for all of these monetary deals, and just the reason the Mishnah uses Gzeilos v'Chavolos is because that is where the source for three Dayanim comes from. So therefore, the Mishnah picked that. So just skip for a minute this whole discussion about Erev Parshios. So then the Gemara asks, you know, really to identify what exactly is the difference between Hodos and Hodos and other things. So ask the Gemara, Bedinhu Dliboy Nami Mumchen. So the truth is, one would think that the halacha should be that Hodos and Hodos also require Mumchen, also require ordained judges. V'hai Delo B'din Mumchen Mishum D'Rabbi Chanina. And it's Rabbi Chanina's fault, reasoning that they don't need mumchen. The Amr of Chanina, Dvar Torah, Echad Dini Mamanos, Echad Dini Nefashos, Bedrisha V'Chagira. That Rabbi Chanina's position was that really Maker Hadin, whether it's monetary law or capital crime, we need Drisha V'Chagira. And Drisha V'Chagira is a pretty intensive process. And that's something that the Gemara later on, and later Bakken will discuss in great detail, but it's a very rigorous ordeal. So in the case of Dina Nefashos, we understand. We don't want to execute an innocent person, so we're going to really put the agent through the ringer. But because, as Nick Swan says, Shinevar Mishpat Echad Yelachem, because we want to have one consistent system of justice, so then the same standard of testimony is going to be required for Dina Mamanus also. So if that's the default, we're in trouble. So Ma Tamar Dina Mamanus, Lo B'Yid Rishra Chakira. So why is it that we say that Dini Mamanus don't require that? Kedei Shlotin El Dalas B'fnei Logan. So the reason that we have this kula is because we don't want to close the door in front of borrowers. We don't want people to find doors literally slammed in their face when they try to ask for a loan. When they go to the house of a rich person and say, please lend me some money, they don't want to find the Elas Delas, they don't want the door slammed in their face, because that's going to bad, and that's going to be a social problem. But even more directly than a social problem, the Torah emphasizes the importance of lending money. And I think we spent a few minutes on this the other day, that lending money is the stand-in for chesed in general. Nowadays, we don't usually think of it as the first example. We say, a person is such a bal chesed, so we think of all kinds of other acts, of Ikra Cholim and Nicham Avelim and things like that. But lending money is the key chesed that we find in a lot of different contexts. Most of the Sefer Avos Chesed is about that, and often examples in the Gemara focus on that for chesed as a representation. So this is something that is so core to what we're all about, so we don't want anything getting in the way. And therefore we do what we can to make sure that people will be able to get the loans that they need. And we know that if we're going to have a system where if somebody defaults on a loan, the only way there's going to be any recourse is to have a trip to Yerushalayim to go to an ordained Beis Din. So people can say, that's not worth it. I live in the five towns, and I'm not going to get involved with lending people money if I'm going to have to get a time machine and an airplane to go to Point Mountain and Shalayim to deal with this. So it's not... I wonder if in the event time machine, will I also be able to use location things too? Probably will save some expenses. But assuming you need two different machines. So I'm not interested, so I'm not going to lend you money. I don't need this kind of a headache. So therefore, we put into place this other mechanism that we discussed already. How does that work? What something is there in order to allow that? So essentially what our Mishnah tells us is that there is a din of being ominous for Shlosha that is a high standard. That's more than you might otherwise need. Din of ominous for Shlosha means three ordained dayanim, means mumchim. And that refers specifically to gezeilos v'chavot. But Geneva, we'll talk about it in a second, but hodos v'hovos, where people are lending money and risking not getting it back, that has a lower threshold, and that lower threshold seems to be created in order to prevent people from having doors slammed in their faces when they want to borrow money, and then the whole shukusayu mechanism is invoked. Now, how does the Rambam formulate this, right? So if we now have this two-tiered system, that there is, on the one hand, gezeilos v'chavos, whatever that is, and on the other hand, hodos v'halvos. So how does the Rambam formulate this? Well, you saw the Rambam. The Rambam groups things a little bit differently. He uses the same words, but he obeyed most of the same words, but he groups things a little bit differently. How does the Rambam make the distinction? Marty? Right, that basically, he understands this as a way of saying knasos versus non-knasos. That when it's a knas, so then that's where you need a full-blown Beis Din of three mumchim, and that's what gezeilos v'chavolos is a reference to. And when it comes to mumchim, so that's where we have a lower level of Beis Din, that's okay. And that's where Shichusayu, he focuses on Shichusayu. His language actually sounds like he means regular Shichus when he talks about it. However, that's meant to be interpreted. The point is, that's how he breaks it down. Basically, this is what this Mishnah is about. Other Gemara is a little bit more explicit about the Knas Mamon Pilut. And the Rambam seems to understand that that's what the Mishnah is telling us. That Zeilos V'chavolos is a way of saying Knas. And Hodos V'alvolos is basically a way of saying Mamon. Now, that's a little tricky for a couple of reasons. First of all, gezeilos v'chavolos, as a reference to knas, is both helpful and not helpful. Right? In some ways, you can see it being a reference to knas. So, chavala, we know that in the Torah, so if you wound somebody, if you injure somebody, so yechayev the hate bar, five different things. So, some of those are knasos and some aren't. So, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, so among the five things that you have to pay if you hurt somebody, if you wound somebody, so some of them are considered together knas, and some are considered together straight mamon, which has major implications for today. If you go to a Beis Din today and you say somebody wounded me, So there'll be a whole discussion as to what aspects of the five things in the Torah are they going to adjudicate, and what aspects will they not adjudicate. What's knas and what's mamon? So the Paul Chavalos code word for knasos is half appropriate, half not appropriate. Zelos is a little bit harder, right? Because if we're going to distinguish, as we have yesterday and today, between gezel and gneva as two distinct terms, so we know that one has a knas and one doesn't. Right? Which one has the knas? Gneva has kefel, and gezel does not. So to say gezelos as a code word for knasos is a little imprecise. We should also call our attention to the fact that as much as there is this halachic distinction between gezelos and gnevos, so we do find that in some usages there's a little bit of a interchangeability in the terminology. Sometimes one will be used interchangeably with the other. So apparently, in the Rambam's reading, it sounds like that's what's going on. It sounds like that this gezelos to chavalos, as imprecise as might otherwise be, that's the language of knasos, that we have this higher standard, and everything else is subject to shlichus ayin. So the Rambam has some milas to it and some less milas to it. That on the one hand, we're going to have to do a little bit of work, like we've seen, to make it work with all the language in the Gemara, and make all the terminology fit. There's a little bit of squeezing you have to do in order for it to flow. But as far as concept, the Rambam is a very smooth concept. We know that this distinction exists elsewhere in Chazal. It would fit well if that's what the Mishnah means. So practically speaking, we can make a distinction along those lines, so that's helpful. It's also helpful because we have to figure out, just also as far as our social justice is concerned, so we have to know that we have some kind of a functioning business system. We have to know that if people are going to be exploiting other people and ripping off people, so we want there to be some kind of recompense. So we can handle, on some level, we can handle not having knossos there. Obviously, we'd like to have the perfect idealized Torah vision in place, but if you tell me, okay, there's no kefil, there's no knossos in that sense, all right, so our society is not necessarily going to fall apart. But if people can be gozel from each other, and there's no recourse in Besdin, in the contemporary Besdin, so then we're in trouble. Right, so we can't really have a society where gizelos at all are not being addressed. So again, so the Rambam's distinction is smoother both conceptually and practically, but you have textual problems.
You're saying that Zelos including Nebos, so while the Kiva wouldn't be enforced, still like the strict principle now, that would
be right. From the Rambam, that's what it would be, right? Which, and then that makes sense. Okay, so if it's just we don't do Knossos, again, other Gemara sound like this. And so if we don't do Knossos, okay, so then fine, we'll live without Knossos. But the basic, I should get back my carrot, somebody should be able to grab my stuff and there's no recourse. It's hard to believe. So the Rambam's approach addresses that as well, despite having certain textual problems. So Tosfos, you saw Tosfos in the Gimel Amud Aleph, Shelo Tinol Delos Bifnei Lovin. So we had that on the Rambam Kolmos at one point, I'm pretty sure. So Tosfos addresses some of these issues, and almost out of time, so we'll just have to, we will have to fill in some of this, whenever the next episode will be, we'll have to figure that out. But Tosfos addresses some of these issues real quick, quickly. So, Gzeilos v'chavalos k'suvas isha, Yerushos v'matanos. Right, these are all basic aspects of everyday modern life. Right? We have all of these issues. K'kulu nami lo b'yus rishu v'chakira. So, all of these things also we don't need rishu v'chakira. Right, which is not so obvious from the Gemara. We start off saying Gzeilos v'chavalos. So the Gemara, it's not so clear that that doesn't mean Rishu Chakira, but that's what Tosfos maintains. Why Kidei Shlo Tino Delos, Kidei Shlo Tino Delos, rather, Bifnei Gazlanim. That we want to close the door before Gazlanim. We don't want Gazlanim to feel like there's no disincentive to be a Gazlan. The same way we want people to be encouraged to lend money, knowing that they'll be able to get it back, there'll be easy recourse to a Besdin. So We also want to have the opposite effect from the gazlanim. We don't want the gazlanim. The lenders will suffer if there's no bezdin. The gazlanim will profit if there's no bezdin. So we don't want the gazlanim to feel, okay, it's open season on Zela because there's no bezdin. So we want to close that door. So what does that closing that door mean? It doesn't mean the same whole story. It means there's no drisha v'chakira. We're not going to make it impossible for the testimony. We're going to make it easier for witnesses to come and say what they need to say. But then the next statement might be, so then Toman had Kangalo and Goy Mukhtim Brazil for Chabalas, Kamova and Oswald votes. So then let's go the whole way. So let's also then not require Mukhtim, right? The same way that when it comes to Hogos Volvos, we said you don't need to have Mumkin because we don't want the lender to say, I don't want to shut through Shalayim. So if we want to also discourage thieves, so then let's have the same thing across the board. Let's also say, let's make it very easy for the person who is robbed to go to a non-ordained local Besdin and deal with his property recovery. See, Shalom, the Gabi Mumkin or Shayek or Mefesh Bey, Kamozeh. So when it comes to the issue of Mumkin, we don't have the same concern as the group of those who vows. The Bakshash Mu'atas are the Nimnim Lahavos Mechavero, and we'll use at the end of the Mamun Bukavoskova. That a person is going to be hesitant to lend money if it's going to be at all of a schlep for him to get back his money. If there's a default, he's not going to do it. He's not going to get involved. So therefore, we have to make sure that it's very easy for lenders to have recourse. Otherwise, they're just going to say, Mali Latsara Azos, I don't need this whole story. I'm not going to do it. About Gzeilus V'Chavalos, when it comes to Gzeilus V'Chavalos, a person happens to be robbed or wounded. So then, Yodeya HaGazlin, she had Triach HaNigzal Achra Mumkin, and she im Salodin HaGazlin. So the Gazlin will still be discouraged, because we don't need to make it super easy to have recourse, we just need to make it possible. So since the victim has something he can do, and he's going to be motivated to do it, because he's got to get back his stolen property, so he's going to do it. So the Gazlin will be discouraged because he knows that ultimately there is something his victim can do and his victim will be motivated to do it, so that will be enough. So it's an important insight into human psychology about the different levels of motivation one needs. The lender, we're afraid any amount of discouragement is going to scare him off and we don't want that to happen. And the victim will need to work a little bit, but that's okay because he's going to be motivated internally and therefore that will discourage the Gazlin. Yogi Shlomar, let's skip to the middle here, because we're running out of time. So the key line I want you to see in Tosus is, so skip to the wide lines, where the Gemara quotes a couple of, the Tosus quotes a couple of other places where there does seem to be Gizela being treated like other things today, like Hodos Volvos. So says Tosfos, Yesh Lomar, B'chol Hani, so in the cases where we see Gezela being dealt with, Efshe Shadachlu Zed Zeh, Al Yedei Tafsi, so it could be that they actually just physically grab one thing to the other, and therefore they kind of force the situation. Oh, the Omer, Gvoy Ludina Beretz Yisrael, or they actually went to Eretz Yisrael in order to have things dealt with, Yisrael Shofar Kamba, Gvoy Kamba. And this is the other idea that we find in other Rishonim, so there are some who say that when gizelos are dealt with, it means gizelos al yedei chavolos. What's that? Gizelos that aren't dealt with, let's say. What does that mean? It means kamo diminsi beitre. You have two people who are fighting with each other. And they're hitting each other and fighting. So in the course of fighting, so then if somebody ends up stealing something from someone else, that's the only thing that's excluded. So to deal with the textual problem that when the Gemara says that you need a full blown bezdin for gzeilos v'chavalos, it doesn't mean that we won't deal nowadays with gzeilo or chavala. It's referring to this hybrid case specifically that gzeilos al yedei chavalos. That's unusual. We didn't make a takana to deal with that. Okay, so those are some of the important points of Tosfos. There's more that we have to figure, but the key points that we've seen here is this distinction over the past 2 days, just so we can consolidate before we break for tomorrow, that we saw different standards for Gezel, for Gneva, and for Oshek. We dealt with this Rashi, who talks about the different distinctions which seem to flow with the Aveira versus Kinyane Gineva Gzela. And then we talked about the Gemara's distinction between, on the one hand, you need a high threshold for Gzelos v'Chavalos and a lower threshold for Hodos v'Halvos, the Rambam making a pretty smooth distinction between Knas and Mamon, which works well for concept and for practice, but not so well textually. And Tosus, first of all, explaining why we won't treat Gzelos v'Chavalos like Hodos v'Halvos, the difference in motivation, and also adding, dealing more with the textual problem, how do we address the fact that the Gemara uses this phrase, Gzelos v'Chavalos, as what we don't do. The Rambam just said it was Knas, so Tosfos assumes first that it's literal, that we don't do Gzelos and Chavalos, and gives a couple of approaches to why we find that they are being dealt with. And then it finally says, maybe we deal with it in Gansan. It just means that Gzelos v'Chavalos is a hybrid case, that's a rare situation that we won't deal with. So there's a little bit more to see about the practicalities. Maybe we'll feel a little bit more about this, but we will pick up on this in the days to come. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things, and I guess I will see you soon.
All right.
Sooner or sooner, depending on...